Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined, as always, by Peter Flaherty on this April 18th as we record this episode. How you doing, Peter? What's going on?
I'm doing well. It was another crazy week in college baseball land, another wild week when it comes to the draft cycle, so excited to break it all down with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in the process of doing our next in-season update. It'll be the second update since college baseball has actually gotten rolling. We've gotten players throughout the North rolling as well. Some feedback from high school pitchers and high school hitters up there who have gotten their season started a little bit later. They're in full swing, so it's definitely time to expand the list from 300 to 400, tweaking throughout as we just get more feedback from the industry, more performance from players around the country. So it's busy times on this end. It's been a lot of calls that have been really insightful into this class, and it continues to be a fun one to follow. Peter, I'm not sure if that's changed at all for you, but it feels still pretty wide open at this point. And then we've got some fun players at the top who are doing some really cool things. Charlie Condon and Jack Caglione now, I guess, is the home run race. Condon's up to 24. Cags is quietly at 20. I don't know if it's too quiet, though, but it feels like he wasn't really being talked about in that home run race. But now he's right there with Brayden Montgomery. Travis Bazzano maybe slowing down a bit in that fold, but now things have been fun.
Yeah, without a doubt, it remains super fun to follow. Like, there's a clear, for me, and I think the consensus is there's a clear tier break after 8 to 10 or so guys. It's funny. That's kind of the one thing that's remained sort of constant throughout the cycle is that tier break. Like, there's been shuffling within that top tier. There's been a ton of shuffling outside of it, but like the consensus coming in has kind of remained the same, which has been interesting. But The home run race is fascinating. Brayden Montgomery is another quiet one. Like, I use quiet somewhat facetiously. Like, he has 20 bombs. So he's kind of keeping pace with Condon. And then with Bazzano, and I guess like this can segue into a little bit with Weatherholt, but he got hit on the hand on Tuesday night. And I saw some pictures on Twitter of it. An Oregon State fan actually like zoomed way into the dugout and took some pictures. It did not look great. It was wrapped up pretty good, and then it was in a brace is what it appeared. So I have no clue what the prognosis is, no clue how long he's out. He unsurprisingly didn't play in Oregon State's Wednesday night midweek game. Mm-hmm. I'd kind of be surprised to see him this weekend, no matter, you know, how severe it is. But that's certainly something to monitor going forward. It's nothing that's going to hinder his stock. I don't think like it's an unavoidable injury. It's a very like it's a baseball injury. It's not like a hamstring or a shoulder that's like going to nag you. Like It sucks that it happened, but it's not like an injury that's going to hinder him all that much outside of his production.
It sounds like he might even play this weekend. So hopefully it's nothing too major for him and he just gets right back on track and keeps rolling. It is interesting that the top tier has kind of been the same group of names. I'm curious, every single person I've asked this week, and I've talked to a range of scouting personnel up and down the scouting department hierarchy, and just been asking them in general what their thoughts on the class is at this stage. And almost universally, it feels like people don't really think it's a strong class, especially after you get outside of this top group. I had one scout say that, yeah, maybe it's a good class if you're only talking about the top 10 players, which was fascinating. So it really does feel like there's a tier break. For me, I think I would include the top 8 college players we consistently talk about, which would be Condon, Bazzano, Caglione, Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, Brayden Montgomery, J.J. Weatherholt, Nick Kurtz, in really whatever order you want, although Condon does seem to be still pretty solidly in that one spot. And then I also might even include Connor Griffin in this top tier. He seems like consistently the name that is mentioned either as right outside of that or the next player up. So I'm wondering if he just belongs in that group. And then once you get beyond him, I think there are a couple names that make the most sense to bring up initially afterwards, but no one who feels like a consensus lock to join that group. So I'm curious if you have a 10th or if you think those eight and a half, nine are the names for you as well.
So the eight college players, for sure. Everyone, I think, at this point knows who they are, so I don't need to run through them. I think, like, with Griffin, I have my own opinion on him as a player. Like, if I were picking in that range, I'd go college. But, like, the tools are the tools, and, like, it is super loud. You know, he's got an outstanding pro body, and, again, like, he's lighting it up. You got to really, really love the tools, though, to pop him in that range. So it'll be fascinating to see where he goes. And then outside of, we're at nine now, there are two others that come to mind, two college and one high school. Treya Savage from East Carolina has kind of pitched his way into that range. And he's far from like a consensus top 10 player in the draft right now, but like there's certainly the argument to me that he belongs in that tier. Vance Honeycutt, in a similar breath to Connor Griffin, like, you got to really love it in that range. I personally don't, but the tools, again, are the tools. Like, you have there's legitimate five tool upside here. You just have to be really bought in. I haven't seen enough to be all the way bought in yet. And then I guess you can also throw Bryce Rayner in there, who is really seen nothing but positive momentum this spring. Like, he's taken a real step forward in the box, which has been encouraging. Mm-hmm. I'm still super intrigued with the arm talent, but like, it sounds like the hit tool has really taken a positive step in the right direction. So that's been encouraging to see. So I'd say for me, it's definitely more like 8 to 9 than 10 solid guys. And then like three others jockeying for position in that like 10th spot.
Yeah, I pretty much agree entirely with that. And once you get outside of that 8 to 9 group, I think the opinions really start to vary wildly. Like, there are plenty of people who would be thrilled to have Vance Honeycutt's tool set right there in the middle of the first round. Then you'll talk to other scouts who are like, you know, like, the hit tool concerns are enough that, like, I don't know that he belongs in the first round at all. And there are players that maybe don't like the delivery that Treya Savage has, so they'd have him more in like the middle or back of the first round than like pushing towards the top third. Bryce Rayner, again, I guess depending on like how much you've seen of him recently and what you think of the hit tool, I do think that Bryce Rayner has kind of moved into this like solid number two high school player in the class tier. He has exciting physical tools that maybe aren't quite as explosive and electric as Connor Griffin's, but when you look at 6'3", 195-pound left-handed hitting shortstop with his arm strength, with his raw power, it's a pretty exciting package. He doesn't have the same speed, but to your point, he has been very impressive throughout this spring. It's been consistent positive feedback about him as a hitting prospect. I know we both love him as a pitcher, but he's done everything he needed to offensively. He had a really strong NHSI at USA Baseball last week. I think he swung and missed just a single time. Got a bunch of knocks, got a double, looked good defensively. So, yeah, I think he's playing himself right up into this top 15 range. But after that, it's pretty wide open. I don't know if there are 30 first round talents in this class, but there are going to be 30 first round picks. So it'll be fascinating to see which strategy teams use, which player profiles they prioritize. I mean, this isn't shocking because it happens every year, but I would expect a lot of underslot deals in the first round, especially once we get outside of this top end grouping. But yeah, we'll talk about a few players that maybe aren't inside this top tier. Some players that we're intrigued about further down the board. Some guys we really have been meaning to talk about for a little bit now. But we've mentioned Rayner. He's not exactly as far down the board as some of these other players. But let's just kind of finish the conversation off on Bryce Rayner. Would it shock you if he went in the top 10? And I guess, have you changed your views on him as a hitter versus pitcher at this point? Has it just been enough scout feedback that you're like, you know what, the pitching is a nice fallback option, but I'm kind of bought into this prep shortstop with big power, big arm strength, and a solid approach and developing hit tool at the plate?
I was going to say that infamous area code outing on the mound. I think I'll just be going back to that on Synergy every now and again and dreaming on what could have been. I'm pretty bought in on him now at the plate. The hit tool has taken a step forward. He impacts the baseball really well. He's got present power, great body at 6'3", more than enough arm strength to stick at shortstop and on the left side of the infield. I like his actions over there. There is a lot to love here. And I know it's not like Connor Griffin, like crazy loud in all facets of the game. But I've become way more bought in on Rainer this spring. And I know that anyone listening to this will be not shocked in the slightest to hear me say it next, but still, if I were picking in this, like, gosh, it wouldn't shock me to go if he goes in the top 10, especially when you talk about, you know, cutting deals, where can you save a little bit? Like, I would not be fazed to hear his name called within the top 10, maybe even a little bit higher than that.
Yeah.
I personally would still probably go like college until, I don't know, 10 or so. But like, if he's there for me and I'm a team picking in like 10 to 15 and looking at these other names on the board.
Yeah.
And especially like if he Savage goes early, I'd be thrilled to get someone like Bryce Rainer 12 to 15 plus. And then it's like, I really like William Schmidt. James Tibbs is a guy I love. Like, even just talking it through, one, it's going to be really hard for decision makers everywhere to be like pounding the table potentially on some of these guys. And it also just like, this thing could go haywire so fast. And like, you could shuffle these names in a lot of different ways, and it would, there's an argument to be made like for whatever order you end up on. So it makes it a lot of fun, but long-winded answer short, I'm very bought in on Bryce Rainer from an offensive standpoint, bought in the sense that I'm like off him being a pitcher now, even though I'm still very intrigued with the arm talent and think he could be, you know, there's plenty of upside there, but no, I'm in camp Bryce Rainer as a hitter.
Yeah. And I mean, again, not a lot of shortstops in this class. He has a chance to be the first real shortstop selected on the board, depending on how some of the other infielders in that college grouping are picked and treated on draft day. But to your point about guys going in the top 10 that are surprising, even if we do feel like we have like a locked in tier one of players, it wouldn't be surprising at all if there was another player that jumped in and surprised us in that range. It just happens so regularly in the draft. Whether that's because of an underslot situation, a money-saving situation, or just because teams vary in how they view these players. So even if like most people agree that there's a group of top eight, it only takes one team to have a different opinion to change things. So that can have a name jump in that range that we don't expect, and then one of these kind of tier one prospects slides down to a team that maybe didn't expect those guys to land there. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about Bryce Rainer at this point, watching all of his ABs at the NHSI, watching all of his defensive chances. He made one really impressive play deep in the hole at shortstop where he really got a chance to show off that arm strength. He is quite big for the position. I think there's a decent chance he has to move off to third base. But even if that does happen, I think he's got the tools to be an above average defender at the hot corner. And there's no real reason to move him off immediately if he winds up having better lateral mobility and the body kind of stays manageable as he develops. Certainly no reason to move him off the position. I'm sure if he does keep playing shortstop and keeps hitting, he's going to get those inevitable Corey Seager comps that every large left-handed hitting shortstop seems to get these days. But no, he's been just unanimously positive feedback throughout the spring. And so I think he's in a good spot at this point. But let's move on to your preferred demographic, Peter, college players. Let's move a little bit further down the board. And kind of,
I will say though, before we go to the college guys, like one prepster who I wouldn't be shocked if he goes in that, you know, again, it might not be top 10, but 10 to like 13, 14 is William Schmidt. Like I really like him a lot. I know he's gotten a lot of love this spring. Like he's one that would not surprise me at all if he goes somewhere in there.
Yeah. He also wouldn't surprise me if he wound up falling further than we expected and getting paid more, just because that demographic seems the most tricky, likely to slide on draft day. Like, it's not a left-handed pitcher, but similar to Thomas White a year ago, like he gets taken later, but paid like a first rounder. Definitely seems like a common occurrence with these high school pitchers. And it just seems like there are more teams who just outright won't take a high school pitcher with their first pick. Like, that's just not something that they have any interest in doing. So that creates more opportunities for them to slide. But again, it wouldn't shock me if he went in the range you're talking about either. All right, let's move on to some college players. There's a catcher that's been doing well. We've got a first base slash center fielder I want to talk about today, and then a couple of Vanderbilt arms. Peter, you tell me where you want to start.
Let's start on the position player side. I think there are two really intriguing guys.
Yeah, well, let's just go with Walker Yannick then, because he's had a tremendous season. I've had a real... It's been tricky, I would say, for me to line up the college catchers in this class. I've asked a number of scouts like how they would do it, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of conviction. But Walker Yannick is trending in the right direction. I know for several weeks now, I think you've been saying that he's your number two catcher in the class. It feels like more and more I'm hearing that from scouts in the industry. He is looking at a career best year offensively. He's hitting .389, .477. 725 with 11 homers. That's too shy of his 13 homer mark that he did in 57 games in 2023. He's hit over 300 all 3 years to this point in his Sam Houston State career. That's more than Vance Honeycutt can say. Obviously, different conference, different team. But the fact that he's doing this with his defensive profile and skill set behind the plate is really exciting, and he's starting to get a lot of first round chatter. Tell me more about Walker Yannick and why you're so excited about him, Peter.
Yeah, so it's a take I've kind of had like holstered, more alluded to for the last few weeks. But like, he is my catcher number two in the class, which is becoming colder and colder by the day. I know Malcolm Moore, you look at the back of the baseball card and it's largely unimpressive, but the numbers don't tell the whole story there. Like, he's still impacting the baseball and hitting it hard. But I really like Walker Yannick. I got a great look at him over the summer on the Cape. I didn't know too much about him coming into the summer. Like, I know he had a really good year at Sam Houston, saw him play a couple of times. But I was lucky enough to get a handful of looks at him on the Cape, and I was super, super impressed with him. Like, it's a prototypical catcher build. He can drive and impact the baseball, and he's a high impact defender. And I'm a real big fan of the defensive skill set. He does an excellent job of corralling balls in the dirt, but his catch and throw ability is, I think, what sets him apart a little bit from the other catchers in the class. He got a quick transfer, moves his feet really well. It's a plus arm for me. This summer, I think he threw out 36% of all potential base stealers, which is incredibly loud. When you look at his slash line and what he's doing, it might be kind of hard to believe this. The only issue I have, and it's like, again, we kind of have this with everyone, is how bought in are you on the hit tool? Like, he struggled this year with spin. The approach is just fine. But I think he can hit for enough power, and there's enough present power there to kind of mitigate that. But that's kind of the only wart that I have. But there's a lot to like. Like, there's an argument to be made that, the power is borderline plus, the arm is plus, the defense is plus. And again, like, a sneaky aspect to his game is he's not an oaf back there, and he's not an oaf moving. Like, he moves pretty well. He's a sneaky athlete. And when you're talking about potential of three plus tools, a guy that's a slam dunk to stick behind the plate, Cape performer, college performer. There's a lot to love, and there's a lot to kind of feel safe about. I don't know if I'm picking early in the second round, and we'll see if he even makes it there.
I wouldn't bet on it at this stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he's there for my second round pick, I am jumping on that extremely fast, like, no brainer. So I love him. He's my catcher number two behind Loma Vita, but it's getting closer and closer.
Yeah, no, he's had a tremendous season, and I really just love the way he moves behind the plate, the way he receives. You mentioned the catch and throw skills as being perhaps the best in the class. He's actually thrown out more than 50% of the base runners who have tried to steal against him this spring, which is ludicrous. He's caught 12 runners and 10 have successfully taken bags against him. Those are just numbers that you don't often see. And watching him on some of these throws, like, he gets rid of the ball so quickly, and it looks like the ball, it's one of those arms where it looks like the ball speeds up as it's going to second base, which is impossible, but just a really impressive arm. It's a one knee setup, but he moves well behind the plate. I mean, it's more and more common to see the one knee setups, but it's a full kickstand setup. I like his hands behind the dish. I think he frames the ball really nicely. Everything about the way he he works behind the plate, has me confident that he can be definitely an above average defender. And it wouldn't be surprising at all if he was a plus sort of impact defensive catcher behind the dish. So the fact that you're getting that and you don't really have to project much at all to feel comfortable about that is a great starting point. And then you look at just the overall track record of his performance in college. I mean, it's not the biggest conference, and maybe you can critique that a bit, and there are some missed questions against spin that you might want him to improve moving forward, but his production against all pitch types this spring has been impressive. He's absolutely annihilated fastballs. It's an 85% overall contact rate against heaters. He's handled 92 plus mile per hour fastballs. Now, maybe it's not the same sample that you would see in the SEC. So if you really wanted to critique the offensive tools, the hit tool and the power, if you were even on the more cautious or conservative ends of that spectrum, I think when you put all the pieces together here, it's still a really appealing profile. And yeah, there's not a whole lot for me to ding him for. He just looks like a really impressive catcher who's chose a really good time to have a career offensive year.
Yeah, and he's not a byproduct of a bad conference and using metal too. I think like what he did this past summer is going to be a huge boost, you know, come July. Like I saw it firsthand. Like he can really impact and drive the baseball with wood.
Yeah, he hit really quickly. He hit 5 homers, triple, 5 doubles in 30 games with Falmouth. The overall line was 281, 364, 474 with the wood bat. So not the same that he's doing this year with Sam Houston State, but certainly a pretty productive line.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm with you. Like there are very few holes, I think, to poke in his game. Like the one is just the overall like pure hit tool. But I think that this summer provides a pretty good snapshot into a potential projection as to what he's going to do at the pro level. So I really like him a lot. I'm happy to see him getting more love. And I'm with you that I think in talking about him more, like, I don't know if he's going to make it to team second picks here in July.
Yeah, certainly as I've talked with scouts this week, it definitely doesn't feel like that. It feels like there's enough heat on him that that would be surprising if it happened. And again, it's a demographic that is just highly coveted. Even for like org type players, catchers are really prized. So if you're talking about an actual prospect with impact tools who has performance, like how far can that really last in a class that you don't think is an average draft class? So pretty appealing overall. Any final comments on Yannick, or should we move on to another college hitter?
I'm up to go to the next hitter.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about Jared Thomas, Texas first baseman, outfielder, pitcher, question mark. He did pitch recently. I don't know if it went as well as he was hoping. But even outside of him getting on the mound and throwing, he's been a tremendous hitter for 2 years now. In 2023, he hit 321, 398, 484, four homers, 15 doubles in 64 games. This year, he's continued to hit for high average. He's gotten on base quite a bit. The strikeout rate has increased, but he has also added a lot more power. He's hitting 381, 476, 684 with 11 homers, 12 doubles. It's a 23% strikeout rate, which is getting towards the maybe more concerning range or solidly in it. But he's walked 10% or better year over year. And he's actually kind of a unique athlete. I mean, you don't often hear first base center field profiles, and I talked to some scouts who think he's definitely going to go out and start his pro career as a center fielder. They think he's athletic enough to handle that position. They think he moves around well, and that would certainly help the burden of him profiling and like having enough power to profile nicely at the pro level. So it's been a strong year for him. He feels like a pretty safe day one pick at this stage. I'm curious like where eventually he falls, but it's been a strong year for him, and I'm curious what you think about him, Peter.
Yeah, I was going to say, when looking at Jared Thomas and where he plays on a game-to-game basis, I wouldn't let the box score fool you of him being at first base. I'm pretty convicted on him being an outfielder, potentially even a center fielder at the next level. He's a really good athlete. He can go and get it in center field. He's got range to either gap and in all directions. There's present arm strength there. He can really run. Like his overall skill set, I think translates really well to the outfield. And then at the plate, like this year, he's striking out a tick more. He's not making like the advanced barrel skills are still there. I think like he's seen a pretty dramatic uptick in power, which has led to the like slightly increased strikeout rate, but nothing that is glaring. He's consistently, again, on the barrel. He's hitting the ball hard. It's a really simple setup, low maintenance one in the box. It's big time hand speed. I really like the operation as a whole. It's pretty fast twitch and hitterish. Again, like he's grown into some more power this year, which has been encouraging to see. Like last year, he hit 15 doubles with four home runs. This year, he's already up to 11 home runs. Has eclipsed his RBI total. So it's looking like a really, really productive season. And I don't know if he's quite going to make it into the first round. But again, like he's someone along with Walker Yannick that I've grown to really love between last spring and then now what he's doing this year. Again, like, man, if he's around in the second round or whenever my team is picking second, like, again, I'm doing backflips. I'm thrilled that he's there. So a lot to like, again, with Thomas.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm entirely sold on like what sort of a hitter he's going to be. In the past, he's been more of a low ball hitter, and it seems like if you can attack him at the top of the zone with quality stuff, you're going to have a decent time. And he's also doing this two-strike approach with a really crouched, spread-out stance. And again, this seems to be becoming more and more popular with a lot of college hitters. So like seeing a two-strike adjustment is nice, but it almost feels like overly manufactured to me the way he's doing it. So I do wonder, like, ultimately what the hit tool is going to be, how much power he's going to have at the next level. It's interesting. I don't know, like, if it's, like, super loud offensive tools, but it certainly seems solid enough that if he's going to play center field and play that position well, it's a fairly well-rounded profile.
Yeah, and I think the key, too, is, like, you know, I think he's going to have to, in terms of maximizing the profile, a lot of this for me has to do with like the idea of him potentially sticking at center field long-term. Like if that changes and you're looking at, you know, a left fielder potentially, or like, I don't think he's a first baseman professionally. I think he'll move off of it, but I think the fact that you're looking at a potential center fielder and a guy that's going to stick at a premium position is that has me really excited. So there are certainly some question marks, but I'm pretty bought in at this point. Mm-hmm. So
any thoughts on him hopping on the mound? It was just 2 days ago. He threw an inning, 1.2 innings, struck out one, let up a couple runs, let up a homer. I mean, he has a good arm, but did you watch that? Do you have any thoughts on him on the mound, or is it just maybe an afterthought for his overall profile?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an afterthought. I think it's more like Texas just needed an arm for a couple innings. Like a lot of these guys in college, like he was a great pitcher in high school, threw a couple no-hitters. There was like really nothing to speak of when it came to stuff from what I saw. Like I saw arm speed and like he flashed the arm strength a little, but there was like, I think when it comes to, you know, what does that mean? It was a nothing burger. So
awesome. Well, yeah. And I don't know how much value there is to him being a potentially plus defender at first. I've heard that from some scouts. Maybe there is just a little bit of value you have in like late in games if you want to move some players around. Just him having that defensive versatility is something that has added to the profile. It's not like you see big league teams prioritizing first base defense though in late situations when they're trying to hold on to a lead. So I'm not sure like how much teams will be able to utilize that, but the fact that he can pick it there, I guess, is something.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just like a nice little added bonus. I think that teams, like when you're drafting, you know, especially in the first, second, third round, even beyond and throughout the draft, I don't think that they're like going to be sitting there and drafting based on like whether he can be like a nice defensive piece late in games. But I think it's certainly like a nice added bonus where he can handle himself really well around the bag. Mm-hmm. He's got a ton of experience there. He handles the position well. I think it's just another positive check for him.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to a couple pitchers that are potential day one players. Maybe they're locked in day one players, but I don't feel like I have confidence once we get into this sort of range saying that with any certainty, given how the drafts have historically gone and how this class is looking. But we've got one player in Carter Holton. We're going to talk about two Vanderbilt arms here, who has been one of the more consistent college starters in baseball over the last 3 years. He got off to maybe a little bit of a slower start early this year. Didn't hear a bunch of chatter about him in non-conference play. He got hit around a few times against Florida Atlantic, against Gonzaga, against Louisiana. Just didn't have the cleanest outings, but then the conference flipped into SEC play and he's really been pretty solid outside of his most recent start against Texas A&M, which Texas A&M is a pretty good club, and both these pitchers kind of got hit around against A&M. So maybe it's not the most ideal timing to bring them up, because Holton allowed 6 earned runs, a pair of homers against Texas A&M, and then Bryce Cunningham, the other pitcher we're going to talk about here, he allowed 7 earned runs, 3 homers, and both of his last 2 starts have not been ideal. But Carter Holton has been one of the steadiest presences in college baseball, left-handed pitcher, kind of a maxed-out frame, solid fastball, pair of breaking balls. And then Bryce Cunningham is maybe the guy who we didn't have massive expectations for him coming into the year. He had a split starter reliever role with Vandy in 2022 and 2023, has been a full-time starter, and he's shown really impressive stuff. The fastball's been sitting mid-90s, got a good slider, the changeup looks like it's improved. And then he's also an odd one because it really feels like he dominates at home, and then he goes on the road, and then things really just fall apart for him. So let's just get into a conversation about both these pitchers. How high do you expect them in the draft? How much do you like these guys, and just thoughts on their developments this season?
Yeah, I think with both, for me, they're at this point pretty safely day one picks. Like, I know it's tough timing bringing them up just after last weekend, but holding up until then, like you alluded to it. And like, I know he got off to a slower start against, you know, Florida Atlantic, Gonzaga, and a really good Louisiana team, but you know, some of that was a byproduct of just metal bats and fluky hits. Like, he wasn't necessarily getting tattooed by any stretch. And then he really turned it on and just hit a little speed bump last weekend at A&M. And A&M is, for my money's worth, the most complete team in college baseball. So it happens. I look forward to seeing how he bounces back this weekend against Florida. But again, with Holton, like you mentioned, it's a pretty maxed out compact frame at 5'11", and I think a tick over 201 or a tick over 200 pounds. Super strong lower half. There's plenty of arm speed. Fastball has been in the mid 90s. It's touched, I think, this year, 97, 98. Two distinct breaking balls with a high 70s curveball and mid 80s slider. I think the slider, for my money's worth, is a plus pitch right now. The curveball is also plenty effective. And he's also mixing in a mid 80s changeup that'll show some tumbling life, and it gets a lot of swing and miss. This year, it's been better this year than it was last. And I think also for me, like, he's an advanced strike thrower. He's got plus control and command of his fastball. He's got advanced feel for both of his breaking balls. I think that I feel pretty confident in his ability to start at the next level. So I think there's, for me with Holton, like, that's a slam dunk top two round type of guy. And then with Cunningham, I didn't know if you wanted to chime in on Holton.
I can chime in really quickly. I'm just wondering about just how convicted you are in the strikes with him. And I think I maybe am biased here, because the few times I've seen him in person, it's just been more scattered than I expected. And maybe this is just a case of every pitcher having those days, but the career walk rate is 9.2%. This year, he's looking at an 8.5% walk rate. Has always been generally solid throughout his college career, but I maybe would be a little bit more skeptical about the fastball command. But again, this year, he's throwing it for strikes at a 71% clip. That's a really good rate. I think it's maybe just a case where my in-person looks have always been kind of leaving me wanting a little bit. So I'm encouraged by the fact that you're so bullish on him as a starter, and like the pitchability piece you like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it wavered more last year at Vanderbilt than it did this year. I think it's more of like he's consistent, like he's commanding the ball around the strike zone, but like when it comes to the control, like I don't know if that necessarily is plus, but he's consistently around the zone. And like, again, there are so few starters in this class that like I can really hang my hat on and say, okay, they're going to start I feel very confident in their ability to start for the entirety of their professional career. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if I'm 1,000% there, with Holton. Like, again, it's a little efforty. Mm-hmm. You talk about, again, like the strike throwing has taken a step in the right direction. And for him to keep that up, that'll be huge. But I feel reasonably confident, in his ability to throw strikes.
The way it looks on the mound is certainly not how you would draw it up for a starter, but I feel like just the fact that he has thrown 34 starts in the SEC over 3 years and has been generally pretty productive in that role has to make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you got like an SEC performer and he's got a really good track record of doing it, I think there's some comfort to it. Mm-hmm. And then I guess with Cunningham, like he was a sneaky one, because coming into the year, it was TBD as to whether or not he'd even pitch in Vanderbilt's weekend rotation, and he's kind of pitched his way into that role. Similar to Walker Yannick, I got a really good look at him a couple times this summer, and he had a really productive year, or I guess summer for Bourne. 2.3 ERA, made 5 starts, 25 Ks to just 7 walks. Big 6'5" kid. It's less of a diverse pitch mix, and I think less like stuff maybe than Holton. But you've got a mid 90s fastball like Holton that's been up to, I think, 96, 97, maybe even 98 this year. I really like the slider. And then you've also got, like, I like the body a lot more, I think, than Holton. Like, you've got a 6'5".
He looks like how you drop a big league starter much more than Holton does.
Yeah, it's like your prototypical starter build, 6'5", 230. I think he moves reasonably well on the mound. I like the slider right now. I kind of projecting on it. I think that it's going to end up being a plus pitch down the road for him. Fastball plays well in the top half of the zone, which is where it generates most of its swing and miss. And then I think going forward with Cunningham, just the key is like the continued development of that third pitch, and the changeup has been super, super effective this year. It's like, I think 8 to 9 miles an hour off his fastball at times. He throws it with conviction. It'll show fade to the arm side and as well as some tumble. So, I think like there's very, like, he's a very intriguing one for me to keep an eye on as the season goes on. And like, I would not be shocked to hear him, to hear his name get called like really early.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, I think, for him closing out the season, because there were points where he just looked dominant, and there have also been points where things have really fallen apart for him, and he's been a bit homer-prone. In each of his last two games, he gave up three homers against Texas A&M, most recently against LSU the game before. He had a two-homer game against South Carolina 4 weeks ago. So just kind of handling some of the week-to-week inconsistencies as he closes out the season, I think, will be key for him. But I do like the fact that he's throwing the changeup 17% of the time, and he has gotten a 63% miss rate on that pitch. Those are both pretty impressive numbers, especially at the college level when you don't see pitchers throwing changeups a ton by and large. That's been solid for me. And even outside of the miss rate, hitters just aren't doing much damage to that pitch overall. So I'm kind of encouraged by the numbers we're seeing on the changeup. I do wonder what the pitchability, the command and control is for him ultimately. For his career, he's been about a 10.5% walk rate kind of pitcher. Last year it was pushing 13%, which is getting into kind of dicey range. This year, overall, through his first nine starts and 46 innings, which is the most he's thrown for Vanderbilt in a single season, he's looking at a career best 9.3% walk rate. So that's encouraging. I think he has done a better job establishing the fastball for strikes than the secondary. So I'll be curious to kind of see what scouts think about ultimately what the command and control are profiling for him. It doesn't feel like you can go any more than just average in that area for him now. Although if you wanted to project on him because you like the athlete, then maybe you could get a little bit more bullish on that. But that piece is kind of interesting as well for him.
Yeah, for me right now, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'd say for me, it's like a 50. Like that's what I'd grade it out as. And I want to see him perform and really shove in a start away from home, outside of his comfort zone, in a hostile environment. And he'll have a couple of opportunities left in the regular season. Vanderbilt goes to Georgia, I think, in two weekends. And then they finish out the regular season at Kentucky before going to Hoover. TBD how Vanderbilt lines up their pitching for that, just because, you know, there are a lot of unknowns. And then, like, if Vanderbilt like goes to the College World Series and it's on the backs of Carter Holton and Bryce Cunningham with them making a couple of really good starts, like that's like we've seen guys pretty drastically boost their stocks with postseason performance, most notably like on the mound.
Yep. If you've got big decision makers, GMs, special assistants, directors coming in and watching you against some of the better programs in baseball and you're shoving, it's really going to move the needle for you. So it's a prime opportunity to move your draft stock in the right direction.
No doubt. So it's been a little bit of a roller coastery season for the two of them. But they have plenty of opportunities here in the next month and a half to 2 months to solidify and also boost their draft stock.
Mm-hmm. Peter, that's all I had on these two guys. So unless you have any other players to talk through, we can kind of do some housekeeping and then get out of here.
Those were the quartet of guys that I was honed in on for this week, and thought we summed them up pretty well. So I got nothing else.
Nice. Yeah. Well, maybe I can get back and see the rest of Jack Leiter's start after this podcast.
He's making his debut.
It's so
we better hurry then.
It's not great. Yeah. Three innings, five hits, four and runs so far for him. So maybe not as crisp as he was hoping. But yeah, what do you have to plug? What's coming up for you on the horizon or anything you want to let the listeners know before we get out of here?
Yeah. By the time you're listening to this, I'll have a piece up on five risers in the, it's eons away again, but the 2025 class, there's a new SP1 for me. I don't think it's too difficult to guess. And then I'll be talking about a handful of other guys who have performed really well as sophomores. So that'll be up by the time you're listening to this. My weekly What to Watch for piece is out every Thursday. Hot Sheet with Carlos every Tuesday. Draft Pod every Friday. Top 25 every Monday. And College Pod every Friday. So
pretty loaded schedule you got there, Peter.
Yeah, a lot of stuff, a lot of fun stuff, and hopefully valuable information for everyone, whether you're a college fan or draft Nick.
Yeah, and for me, just be on the lookout next week for new draft rankings, updated draft board, expanding to 400 players, and then mock draft 2.0 is also on the horizon. So those are the two big pieces that I've been working on and will be out at some point on the site next week. So look for those. I know you guys really love the mock drafts. We're getting a little bit closer to where those actually start to mean something. I think even still, once we're getting to 10, like we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, it's kind of wide open at this stage. So those are two pieces for me to look out for. But thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for supporting BA and subscribing. If you do, we really appreciate you guys allowing us to do this work that we're doing. So thanks so much. Hope everyone has a great weekend. And for Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.